So this is September 30th, 2012, and it's their second class in the fall series on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. I want to read you a quote by Dzogchen Panlop Rinpoche. He says, "Knowing our mind not only leads to a happy life, it transforms every trace of confusion and wakes us up completely. To experience that awakened state is to know freedom in its purest sense. This state of freedom is not dependent on external circumstances. It does not change with the ups and downs of life. It's the same whether we experience gain or loss, praise or blame, pleasant or unpleasant conditions. In the beginning, we only glimpse this state, but those glimpses become increasingly more familiar and stable. In the end, the state of freedom becomes our home ground." So that's why I'm here. That's what I'm shooting for. So before we continue, let's just do another short meditation. This is to watch the flow of our mind states. Remember, part of this sutra teaching is about watching the coming and going, the arising and fading away of everything. And we do that by watching the contents of our minds, the things that come up, how they're sustained, and how they dissolve or disintegrate. So we begin by coming home to our breath. And as we sit and follow our breath, we notice any mind state that arises. Could be anticipation, restlessness, impatience, sleepiness, anything. And when something arises in your mind, become curious about it. Where it has come from and why has it arisen right now? Watch it with your observing self. Let your mindfulness surround it, offering it kind attention and a judgment-free awareness. Allow it to morph, to change, perhaps to dissolve and become something different. Or allow it to stay. Feel any sensations in the body that might be related to this mind state, and just notice and do the same thing with them. Thank you. So we're just going to continue to practice together, and hopefully you'll practice on your own, just observing the flow of your mind states, what comes in, just with that, you know, that curiosity that we talked about last week, that suspending judgment and just being open to whatever's there. So we like to read the exercises. So anybody who has a book, would someone like to volunteer to read exercise 13? And somebody to read exercise 14? Someone loud and clear. Okay, great.
Sure. Okay. Exercise 13, observing the mood. Okay. Observing the desiring mind. When his mind is desiring, the practitioner is aware, my mind is desiring. When his mind is not desiring, he is aware, my mind is not desiring. When his mind is hating something, he is aware, my mind is hating. When his mind is not hating, he is aware, my mind is not hating. When his mind is in a state of ignorance, he is aware, my mind is in a state of ignorance. When his mind is not in a state of ignorance, he is aware, my mind is not in a state of ignorance. When his mind is tense, he is aware, my mind is tense. When his mind is not tense, he is aware, my mind is not tense. When his mind is distracted, he is aware, my mind is distracted. When his mind is not distracted, he is aware, my mind is not distracted. When his mind has a wider scope, he is aware, my mind has widened in scope. When his mind has a narrow scope, he is aware, my mind has become narrow in scope. When his mind is capable of reaching a higher state, he is aware, my mind is capable of reaching a higher state. When his mind is not capable of reaching a higher state, he is aware, my mind is not capable of reaching a higher state. When his mind is composed, he is aware, my mind is composed. When his mind is not composed, he is aware, my mind is not composed. When his mind is free, he is aware, my mind is free. When his mind is not free, he is aware, my mind is not free.
Someone read 14.
Okay. Exercise 14, observing anger. When anger is present in him, he is aware anger is present in me. When anger is not present in him, he is aware anger is not present in me. When anger begins to arise, he is aware of it. When already arisen, anger is abandoned. He is aware of it. But anger already abandoned will not arise again in the future. He is aware of it.
So very practical. All the Buddhist teachings are very practical. They're so practical and so profound that they just seem really obvious when you look at them at first. And to me, that's why I need to really study and practice and share with other people, because it's kind of, well, yeah, of course, you know. You do what's wholesome and you notice that, and you don't do what's unwholesome and you notice that, and you know, you notice how good you have it, and you notice, you know. But this is a really deep practice, because it leads us to really waking up. It leads us to cultivating the skill of knowing where we are in each moment. Where we are in our spot in the universe, and begins to, as we'll talk about probably every week, dissolve those boundaries that we have. That's the illusion between us and the rest of the world, that ego-centered pearl view that we talked about last time. So, you know, this, what we do together here in this study is really create ourselves as an investigative team. We talked about this in the spring class. We're a group of, you know, whatever we want to call ourselves. If we're into CSI, we can be detectives, you know, forensic psychologists or something, or we can be investigative journalists, or anything, research scientists, you know. Whatever we're doing that takes this quality of kind of this clinical observation, you know. And so how do we clinically observe with kindness? You know, we have to be open. We have to have that quality of openness cultivated in us. And that's a really big request, you know, that we let go of our prejudgments, our preconceived notions. That's a really huge thing. Can you just kind of imagine your life if you could walk around free of all your preconceived ideas about how stuff should be and how it is and how you want it to be and how it used to be and, you know, all that stuff. Just let go of all that and be, you know. That's called mindfulness in the present moment, you know. So as we do this, you know, wonderful things come up, miracles come up that we have never observed or noticed before in our lives, and also our shadow comes up. And that's why I think Mary was talking about, you know, Ty was saying how important it is to be aware of and present with your anger, like any of your shadow material. You know, it's because it holds your spiritual energy there. You know? So if you just deny it and push it away, you're just becoming sort of part of a person, you know. And so we want to be aware of that. What are our places that are sort of uncomfortable, or what's behind that trigger that we have all the time? And so, you know, we may be, it's this investigation is kind of a layer by layer process where we may be feeling on top of the world one day, and then we get to the next layer of development and we feel real crummy because we've uncovered something. And it's really healthy to rip off that bandage and have the sun and the air and the light healing it, but it's like it doesn't look good, doesn't smell good, doesn't, not pretty, you know. And so, but that's where, you know, Ty talks about his wonderful metaphor of the compost and the flowers, you know. I mean, and he talks about gardening. We could also be a group of gardeners, you know, cultivating the soil. And you know, as organic gardeners, you know, you don't get very far without compost. And if you've ever made compost, it gets really stinky, you know, at times. And so there's a process of cultivating that compost and freeing up that part that we don't want to look at to reveal the more beauty about ourselves and more truth and more empowerment about ourselves. This is really a path of, you know, the Buddhists call this a path of purification, you know, sort of because there's like clearing the lens, dusting the mirror so that our beauty, our natural radiance can shine out. It's a path of purification, but it's a path of empowerment as well. It really is a path of empowerment, because what is freedom? You know, when you're free, you have access to all power. This isn't about ego power. This isn't about power over. This is about empowering. And so so that's our course. And so we have to let go of judgment and preconceived ideas in order to be open to what's in front of us and what we might come upon at any moment. So we've got these two exercises. Now, these are like really big ones, desire and anger. These are pretty like core basic stuff. And, you know, in Buddhist psychology, there's actually personality types built on these things. It's like you have a desire personality, a greed personality, or you have an aversion personality, or the other one is a delusion. You're just generally deluded, you know. And I've gone through that in my mind, you know. Actually, I didn't ask him about this, but I've thought about it, and like, well, our personality types, you know, and it's like, well, I've got greed with a minor in aversion, you know, and he's got like aversion with a minor in delusion, you know. So it's like aversion's the only thing we have in common. It's like, how's this going to work, you know? Anyway, it's just kind of, you can look at yourself and where are your strongest tendencies, you know. So there is, you know, and desire can be a confusing word. It's a typical word that's used in Buddhism, but there is good desire. I mean, of course, we have a desire to wake up, to be enlightened. Where would we be without desire? So, you know, craving, grasping, attachment, to me, are clearer words for what we're talking about. You know, those aren't really helpful tendencies in us. And so, you know, as we've said, our practice is to notice those tendencies. You know, where's the greed? Okay, here's a story I just thought of. There's a story about the Buddha walking down the road, and this man came up to him and said, Buddha, he said, you know, I can only see out of one eye. And that my eye is going blind, and I'm going to be blind, and I really need your eye. I need one of your eyes. And so the Buddha said, well, you know, I guess you're right. So the Buddha rips out his eye and gives it to the guy, you know. And the guy takes it, and he throws it on the ground, and he steps on it. And so Ananda, Buddha's assistant, you know, just like, oh, my God, you know, how could he do that, you know. And it's like the Buddha, and so Ananda wanted to do something, and the Buddha said, you know, the gift is already given, Ananda. It's already given. I gave the eye, you know. It wasn't like I didn't give it so that this would happen. I gave it. And, you know, we're sort of back in like, you know, there's one cookie left on the plate, and are you going to get it? You know, am I going to be big enough to let you have that cookie? You know, I mean, so it's like we pick where we are. The Buddha's there with his eye. We're there with a cookie. But to just notice, you know, I want that. I want that bigger piece of, you know, I want one more helping of. I want, you know, whatever it is that our tendency goes toward. And to just notice it. And not that we necessarily don't act on that impulse, but we just bring our mindfulness as the sponsor of that, you know, greedy nature. And we say, it's okay, you know, because mindfulness is not judgmental. Mindfulness is not like, you know, a nun that's going to slap your hand with the ruler. The mindfulness is just present. And so if you can begin to do that, then mindfulness and awareness and understanding will start to seep into those patterns, you know, that pattern of grasping, the pattern of aversion, the same thing, the pattern of pushing away from something. It's like turning away. So just notice, just put that little space of mindfulness around it. It helps us create a sense of ease and become friends with wherever we are, because that's really what's going on. It's like we need to learn to be our own best friends. And the only way we can do that is to cultivate that kindness, you know. I mean, we can't be our best friend if we really just turn away from our impulses, if we don't want to look at how we are. I'm not really that way. That's not a person who knows someone, you know. That's just making up a story about somebody. And we do that about ourselves all the time. So to get to know ourselves and to be our own best friend, we need to really bring all of our attention and our awareness and our kindness. Oh, that's interesting. That's what you're doing, you know. And just watch and be there, you know, like somebody who would be really interested in you. And that's you. So one time, a few weeks ago, I had this experience where it was on Tuesday night, and we were sitting during the silent sit, and something came up in me. There was actually some anger in me about a situation that had happened recently, and I really didn't have any idea that it was there until I sat silently in the group. And it wasn't it was an awful thing. It was just I had some residual anger about a way that I felt I was treated. And so then it got to be walking meditation time, and so I thought, okay, you know, this is uncomfortable, you know. And so I took it walking with me, you know, and I was very conscious and aware with my steps and my breath and this feeling of anger. And I just let it be there. And I knew there was nothing I was going to do about the situation. It wasn't anything that was called upon to do anything. It was just like an ego adjustment in me. You know, it was like, oh, that bruised my ego. You know, and so it was just like there. It's like, and I didn't even think about it that way. It was just like, there's this feeling. And then by the time the second sit was over, it had disappeared. It had moved on. You know. So, I mean, it's not always that easy. Sometimes it takes months and years. But it does, when you give it a platform, when you give it your awareness, then it has a chance to really be seen and then to move and transform. One thing that I wasn't very aware of, because I don't know when it happened, but was to watch it dissipate. And we've done that. Last week we did a meditation where we watched, we tried to watch a thought move on. And I think that takes really some skill of observation and some focus to be able to watch that. But that's really, it not only teaches us that the thought is just a thought and it's not us, but it teaches us the whole nature of reality. That everything is changing. Everything is always changing. And somehow, when we can experience that in that little microcosmic way, like we have one experience like that, and we can actually observe it, then it somehow translates into our deeper understanding. And what does that do for us? It helps us let go of our attachment to things being the way they are. And we think, oh, things are pretty okay. Well, what about everybody's going to die in this room? You know, are we okay? Are we really okay? Maybe we are theoretically. Maybe we're okay with that theoretically. Maybe we're really okay with that. But where are we with that? You know, when someone dies that you know, maybe not real close to you, but I mean, how do you really feel? So that's kind of one of those quizzes that comes up. You know, that sort of shows you. And it's like there can be just as much sadness around it, but there's less denial, perhaps. There's less shock that it would happen. I mean, who was it, who was it who said? There was a wise man, and he was asked, what's the strangest thing in the world? And he said, the strangest thing in the world is that all around you things are dying and you don't believe it's going to happen to you. And so that's, you know, this kind of chips away of that. And it empowers us. It empowers us to have a good death and therefore to have a good life. So.